We are coming strong with a recruiting-only edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howard. You know, I said we had a loaded show this week. A lot of Cedric Benson talk. Had to talk some team stuff as we get closer to the Louisiana Tech game. So there was no time for my man, Mike Roach, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor. But as we sit here now, we had a speaking engagement in Dallas today. We've got one in crazy Fort Worth tonight. And I am sitting here in Tarrant County at Mike's house at his kitchen table, and we're going to talk recruiting. Mike, thanks for letting me into your home, petting your dog, and I see your cat hanging out over there. So it's good surroundings as we get ready to talk recruiting.
You get a nice feel for my home office here, yeah, right? I think this is like the coolest week for me. You know, I've been lucky enough because of you to be able to do the Texas X's Fort Worth luncheon or kickoff party or whatever the last 2 years, and that always feels like the finish line almost. It's like, okay, now it's time for the season. So there's always those benchmarks you hit during the year. In summer, it's like when the opening ends and Dave Campbell's comes in the mail, that's like, okay, now we're starting to get ready, and then fall practice starts up, and this is kind of like the last check mark, and then we're into game week. So I'm really excited for both college and high school.
So before Mike and I dive deep into recruiting, and we'll talk Quentin Johnston this week, we'll talk Xavier Alford, we'll talk what's left for 2020. We've covered that the last few podcasts, but now that we're really getting down to the nitty-gritty, we'll talk 2020. And Mike's been on the road since fall practice has started. People have a problem with that. Fall practice is we're in August, and there's nothing fall about the weather in Texas. But you know, Mike's seen some 21s and 22s that are of interest to Texas fans. So we'll get to as much of that as we can. Before we get into that, like I said, let's get some things out of the way. Thank you guys so much for continuing to support Longhorn Blitz, however you do it, whether you're getting the straight feed at Horns 24/7, if you're an Apple Podcast subscriber, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, however you're getting the show. Thank you so much for continuing to support the product. Don't forget to like us. Leave us a review. 5 stars would be preferable. But thank you guys so much for the continued support. Shout out to Last Stand Hats. Those guys are doing great work over there, Mike and the crew. I told everybody on Longhorn Blitz, I met with Mike recently, and they've got big plans for this fall. So get over to laststandhats.com, and they'll take care of all your needs. And you'll see Mike out of tailgates and things like that. So big shout out to Last Stand Hats. And don't forget, Longhorn Blitz is going to air twice weekly on 104.9 The Horn in Austin. You can stream that at hornfm.com or on the Horn app, which if you've got the app, you can also get the audio call for Texas football games with Craig Way, Roger Wallace, and Quan Cosby. Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, and then Thursday nights right after Longhorn Weekly with Tom Herman. That will air. Longhorn Blitz will air. So plenty of ways for you to get the show and to stay locked in. And always get us at Horns 24/7. So, Mike, let's go ahead and get down to business. You know, we'll continue to take credit for the success Texas is enjoying on the recruiting trail, man, because once we launched this new version of the Blitz, they haven't slowed down. 17 verbal commitments right now. A couple last week. Let's go ahead and start with Xavier Alford, because this is one that, yeah, head-to-head win. Tom Herman over Jimbo Fisher. Texas fans obviously love that. But I love the fact that Jason Washington and Craig Kniver both continue to recruit guys that have some scheme versatility to them. I look at Xavier Alford. I look at Jaron Thompson and Keaton Crawford. Even though Crawford's a corner who could play nickel, Thompson and Alford have some nickel versatility to them. So, man, there's a lot to like, obviously, about this take, but, man, this safety position just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and Tom Herman went head-to-head with Jimbo Fisher and won out to get this one.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about ceilings and floors on guys, a lot of times people like high ceilings, and I love high-ceiling guys, obviously, but you can't live and die with only taking high-ceiling guys or only taking high-floor guys. I think you have to find a nice mix. I think that Alford is more of a high floor guy. And when you mix him, like when you put him up next to Tyler Owens, they're completely different prospects. I think that Alford's more of a finished product than Tyler Owens. I think if they were coming in the same class, it's likely Alford would get on the field earlier. But I think you have to have that mix of guys. And what's always stood out to me about Xavier is he's a good athlete. Was a 4.61 guy, I think, or maybe even ran the 4.5s at the opening. He plays a good all-around game, but what's really always stood out to me with him is his knowledge of the game, his coverage ability. You know, I've always liked safeties who can align a defense from the back end, and I think that's what Alford is. He's a field captain in the same way that Caden Stearns was as well. Alfred is a guy that during the spring I went out to see him at a workout, and we were just kind of BSing, talking about last season. He was walking me through the Highland Park State game. He walked me through every coverage they were in and why they were changing coverages, and he can call them on his own at the high school level, which is a really impressive thing to be able to do. He's just got such a good knowledge of coverage principles. He understands how to play them. I don't think he plays too far above his ability when it comes to, you know, getting himself out of position and things like that. And I think that having that's obviously a very valuable thing. Then when you talk about scheme versatility, he's a guy who can play all three safety spots. He can play nickel or either, you know, field or boundary safety. And he's got a little bit of physicality to his game, got some great ball skills. Really just a really solid all-around player.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's going to excite Texas fans a lot, you know, is the head-to-head win over A&M. And you look in this cycle, and anytime we get to the finish line, that's one of those kind of boxes you'd like to check if you're a fan of one of these programs. If you're Texas, it's how many guys did you beat A&M for that they really wanted? How many guys did you get that Oklahoma really wanted? How many guys did you get, especially now that they've got the two-year home-and-home, how many guys did you get that LSU wanted? And when you start going down the list, Mike, I mean, he's won, Princely and Malin, Vernon Broughton. I mean, you're starting to see the wins rack up for Tom Herman. So take it from this standpoint, though. Is this something that you think is a sign to come, or are you a guy that just operates more, hey, this given cycle, the state's just going to Tom Herman?
I think it's more the latter. I think it's so different year to year. When you look at 2018, you know, Herman swept basically everybody who tried to come into the state against him. Yeah. 2019, they obviously had a lot of failings in state and had to go out of state or find some secondary options. 20, it's kind of the balance has kind of swung back a little more. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, in 18, I think Herman got the new coach bump. In 19, I think Fisher got the new coach bump. And now I think you'll see it balance out a little bit more, you know, based on who's winning, what program's generating more momentum and excitement. But, you know, I also think it's there's something to the fact that I think coming in, you know, they, as much as I think Herman was probably as prepared for the job as he could have been, recruiting at Houston and recruiting at Texas are two completely different animals. It's not in the same ballpark. I'm not even sure it's the same sport. But, you know, I think that they were behind when it came to 2019 and being early, and to an extent 20. I think that they've caught up kind of with themselves. I think they're ahead of where they want to be in 21, obviously. And I think they're really making some progress in 22. So they're really getting to the point where they can start layering those classes over one another. And I think you can see that pay off in head-to-heads.
I think part of that, too, is managing the recruiting cycle. And I think now that they've got, you know, their heads wrapped around, okay, here's the December period, that 72-hour window, and here's what it means. I mean, Mike, on the record and your sources off the record, it's one of those deals where they, if they had their druthers, they would be completely done with a class in December, like have everything wrapped up by the time you get to Christmas going into bowl season. Because the key for that is in terms of getting ahead in the next class, like, well, let's say, you know, all spots are filled in theory in December, except maybe you got one or two pieces out there, kind of like, you know, best player available type scenario. Well, now if you're Tom Herman, when you go on the road in January, your entire focus is 21 and 22.
Yeah, you can still do the very almost presidential thing of visiting the school and seeing the commits and making them feel good doing their in-homes, but your real focus is working those 21s and 22s. You don't have those pivotal in-homes, you know, that swing recruitments at the end of a cycle. If you're wrapped up by that point in time. And I think one of the most underrated things about what Herman and his staff have done is in the 2 years of the early signing period, or as he calls it, just the signing period, they've done a really good job of having the majority of their class sign. I think over the last two cycles, 18, it was Keandre Coburn and Keontae Ingram who were the only two that didn't sign.
Yeah, and they made a push, like Moro Ojomo was a guy they went after late, and I'm sure there's one I'm missing.
Yeah, and they got Ojemo after that signing period, I believe. They're all starting to run together for me.
Daniel Carson was one that was...
Yeah, right. But I'm talking of the guys they have committed in the fall. Let's say mid-season, guys they've got committed by mid-season. Most 99% of those guys signed in December. Happened again last year, you know, other than waiting out Javon Shepherd and identifying some JUCOs and some other options, you know, they had that class 99% wrapped up. And that's kind of an undervalued thing when you see other schools going through it, because they're still having to recruit those guys through, you know, through late December and January when Texas can really focus on the guys who are left on their board and getting a head start. You know, the big thing they did this year was have that big elite weekend in January where they brought in the 21s. Yeah. I don't know if that you're able to do that if you're still working on like seven or eight guys.
Not if that weekend, if you're
having official visits and you've got, you know, three or four priority targets on campus, you're not.
Right. And so I think it all kind of builds upon itself. And, you know, like you said, managing that calendar and being able to get a lot of your work done early. And look, everybody, I think the past three cycles, they've started slow and everybody freaks out about it. And, you know, like I said, ask me late summer where we are and I'll tell you if you should freak out or not. And I think they're even further ahead of track than they have been the last couple of cycles.
Let's talk about Alford for a little bit specifically as far as his recruitment goes. And I think you laid it out perfectly, him as a player. And I think that should excite you because just the way the safety position is changing now more than ever, you need that guy to be a quarterback of your defense. Caden Stearns is that guy for Texas. We've seen Brandon Jones kind of do that. I think more so Stearns, and then Alford will be that guy. I think even over a guy like Tyler Owens or Chris Adamora, you know, Adamora is more of a nickel guy anyway. And then Owens just a freak athlete that if from what I've heard from camp, like if he ever really gets it figured out and puts it together, look the hell out. But Alford, Mike, this recruitment, at different times it trended to LSU. At different times it trended to Alabama. At the end we saw it trending to A&M. But from your reporting, from, you know, just reading the tea leaves the whole way, regardless of who was perceived to be in front, Texas always seemed to be the one school that – they might not have been on the surface the leader, but they were right there with his top group.
Yeah, and I think that's an important trend to read in recruiting. You can't ever put a hard and fast rule on something like it because we've seen so many things just randomly change. But I think in most cases, you look for who's consistent in those races over the stretch of time. And, you know, the consistent thing was Alford told me in the spring, you know, it's pretty much Texas and LSU, and everybody else is playing for a way distant third. And you know, in the summer, then it was, well, it's Alabama and Texas, and it was Texas A&M and Texas. If you're consistently in that group that's being mentioned as leaders, I think it bodes really well for you, especially when things are changing so rapidly, because if you're sticking in there when things are changing rapidly, it means you're probably going to come out on top in the end. And, you know, I think that A&M made some crucial errors in that recruitment. I think that they treated Alford like he was a secondary target through most of the year. And in the summer, they came back to him and said, no, we promise you're our primary guy. You're the guy we've wanted all along. And I think he noticed that. And Craig Kniever, you know, while juggling a lot of numbers and recruiting guys like Lathan Ransom and Bryson Washington and Chris Thompson, still made Alford feel like he was a priority target, which he was for them. So, you know, I think that that's a case that Texas doesn't always come out on the winning side of. You know, we've seen them come out more than often on the bad side of something like that. But in this case, I think they did a great job doing that while A&M kind of fumbled it.
Yeah, so let's move on to Quentin Johnston. This is didn't really have anything to do with A&M the entire time. But before we get to the commitment to Texas, something that you mentioned on the board that I think is worth repeating and worth getting into. One thing you see, and I'm a firm believer based on, like, who the head coach is, the position coach. Like, if there's certain schools that offer a certain position, you're like, okay, that makes sense. Like, anytime TCU offers somebody as a corner or a safety, I'm like, okay, if Gary Patterson thinks that kid can play DB, then that tells me a lot about that kid's future. But Quentin Johnston, like, you look at the offer list, Mike, and it's not that impressive like you'd figure a top 75, 50 type kid in the country would have, but – there's a lot of offers he just didn't report because he had, like, his core group of schools that he really liked.
He rattled off for me when I went out there a couple weeks ago, like, who he hadn't reported, and it was some big names. I mean, it was I think Nebraska, I think Ohio State had offered, Michigan. Like, there were a lot of big names. He just didn't feel – he told me, he said, I didn't feel like I needed to report them. They weren't schools I was very interested in. He's like, I'm not real interested in playing the hype game, so why report them? You know, if it takes focus away from my team. He's like, I just didn't see the need to really play that game on Twitter. So, yeah, I think that that's always something important to remember. It goes, it cuts both ways. You know, there's kids who claim offers that don't have them, and there's kids that never report offers, and they've got a million of them. And there's kids like Anthony Hines who report 96 offers, even if they're from Coastal Carolina. So, I mean, it can go a bunch of different ways, but never take – I mean, we do our best to track offers and keep the database up to date and make sure that we're reflecting everything we can. But at the end of the day, we're beholden to the kid to announce that offer. And never really take it for granted that just because this kid doesn't have a billion offers doesn't mean he wasn't offered a billion times. And Quentin is definitely, when you look at him talent-wise, you know, I think he's an easy target for the conspiracy theorists who say, well, he's got nothing in the way of offers, but he's ranked really high. Like, just go watch the film and look at his athletic traits and you'll understand, really why that is.
First thing, like, the one thing in this industry that I'll never get over how just reckless it is, and you're always going to get found out, is if you're reporting offers you don't have. You know, like, people are going to find out, like, Michigan and Ohio State and Oklahoma, they really didn't offer you. And I don't know why kids make it up, but it's been happening since I started in the business. It's still happening, so whatever. To each his own, I guess. But when I look at Quentin Johnston, Mike, here's kind of what I see. I see a guy that a rare package of tools at, you know, 6'4 and what, a 190, 195, whatever he is, right? 6'10, 6'11 high jump guy. Got the vertical speed to play Z in this offense, which, you know, if they're offering a Z receiver, that they feel like he's got the vertical speed to beat somebody deep. So you tie all that together. I think he is the most athletic wide receiver Texas has recruited since Roy Williams. Now, does that mean he's going to be Roy Williams? No, but I think that's how rare it is to see a guy at 6'4", almost 200 pounds, to be like a bouncy, springy athlete like he is. The question for me, and I don't know where you stand on this with him, is his hands. If the hands are there consistently, then I don't think saying he's a poor man's Roy Williams is any kind of knock on him at all. I think that's kind of his ceiling. The floor, to me, I think it's a little higher than most. I think if the hands aren't there consistently, then he's probably like a more bouncy, springy, fluid version of John Bird. Yeah. So that's kind of where I fall on Quentin Johnston. I don't know where you do.
Yeah, I would say, you know, you mentioned my comp for him is a high school comp because he hasn't played a down of college football yet, but I thought he's Dalen Wright. I mean, this was Dalen Wright last year, a big, fluid, strong athlete who could jump, who could run, but just didn't have a lot of fundamental game about him. Now, I think he's a little more polished than Dalen was. I think he has a little more ability to get off the line than Dalen did, but that was mine for him. But when you said that you didn't think that, or you thought that he was the most athletic since Roy Williams, I tried to do a quick scan through my memory of past Longhorn receivers. I would say that, and maybe I'm off, I don't know if you covered this guy or not. To me, I saw him in high school once or twice. He just never put it together in college. Malcolm Williams was one of the bigger freaks I had ever seen.
Yeah, different cat. Like, Malcolm was more stiff is a bad word, but really more of a straight line player.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have this image burned in my head of being at Texas Stadium and seeing him house this kickoff return against God, I want to say it was like Southlake in their heyday. It was one of the more freaky things I'd ever seen. But he was a guy that kind of stood out to me. But, yeah, I mean, the hands, I think it is a legitimate concern. I don't think it is as big of a concern as people make it out to be, if that makes sense. So what I always say about Quentin is he kind of makes the difficult look very easy, and he kind of makes the easy look very difficult. And how many receivers have we seen do that? You know, I mean, if – I think it's sometimes concentration lapses. I don't think he has bad hands. I think it's just lapses in concentration sometimes. And if that's the case, like a guy like John Burt, I just don't think you're ever going to be able to fix that. There's just something with his hands that's not there. Whereas I think with Quentin, it's obvious if he can go climb the ladder and make a one-handed catch, like his hands work, you know, and he can do what he needs to do with them.
Trust me, I co-host a podcast with Rod Babers. I know all about bad hands.
What a shot.
And Rod would admit he has bad hands. Anybody that listens to the Blitz knows Rod will admit he has bad hands.
Well, here, let me take a short tangent. So Michael Huff, who is tied, I think, for the NCAA record in pick sixes. I remember him making a run at that record in college. Around his high school, there was a saying called Huff Hands because he had such bad hands. So, I mean, I guess it doesn't always translate. But, yeah, so I think that it's more – you know, sometimes some mental lapses, and he's still very much coming along. The thing I really like about him talking to his coaches is the work ethic. So Coach Stewart at Temple told me that Quentin came and his dad came in after their sophomore year. And he said, frankly, Quentin wasn't a contributor his sophomore year. And they sat down and said, what do we really need to do to get to this level we want to be? And he told him, you know, I need you to do this. I need you to develop your body in this way. I need you to develop your work habits in this way. He said, Quentin said, all right, took notes and went out and did it. And that's why he is where he is. He talked about his hyper-focus, that he's one of the more hyper-focused kids he's ever seen. And that when he's doing football, he's all football. And then when football's over, he goes to basketball. And basketball is the only thing in the world he focuses on. And then he goes to track and high jumps, you know, damn near 7 feet. So really, to me, I think that's a kid. I always say with kids, if you're willing to put in the work, I think there's a lot of things that can be fixed. I think the biggest things that trip kids up is that they're not willing to put in the work and they can't develop those traits because they don't want to put in the extra work to do it. So I think as long as that work ethic is there, it's something that can be fixed.
So we've covered Johnson. We've covered Alford. All right. So we've covered Quentin Johnson, covered Xavier Alford. This podcast will be in production or maybe posted before the Joshua Eaton decision. Ty Jordan, Mike, I guess could happen at any point.
Any point, yeah. Ty says he wants to go into the season. I think that could happen, and I think it's likely something could happen before the season starts as well.
Okay, so let's assume the rest of the dominoes fall the way they're projected to go, right? Let's just look into the crystal ball, no pun intended. Let's say Joshua Eaton's decision goes as expected and he picks Texas. Let's say Ty Jordan at some point picks Texas, and you and I have talked about this. Like, I think anytime you're trying to build a running back stable and not kind of freak out the top-end runner you've got committed, to me, this is an easy sell to Bijan Robinson because, yes, Ty Jordan can play running back, but you're really recruiting him for that H position.
Yeah, and you find a guy who at least has the versatility and you can tell one thing and tell the other. I mean, I hate to say it that way and sound like they're misleading, right? But you could tell Ty Jordan, yeah, of course you're a running back, and you could tell Bijan Robinson, oh, he's a slot. I mean, it just kind of is what it is, and once they get to campus, it tends to work itself out. You know, I think that a funny thing is I was talking to somebody close to Ty, and they said, well, I wish you Texas writers would stop writing that he's a complimentary back to Bijan Robinson, because that's upsetting him. And it's not. It's upsetting the person I was talking to more than him. I said, well, he is. When we write complimentary, it doesn't mean that he's secondary. It means that you don't want to recruit two guys with the same skill sets. And if you've got kind of a bigger power back who's got some juice, and you get a smaller scat back type who is a legit sub 10 400 guy, those two things complement each other very well. So I just love his versatility. The thing too is he is not just a scat back in that he's built like a little bowling ball. Looks fan. I saw him the other day. He's like at 182, which is, he's going to be able to drop pads. He's going to be hard to hit, and he'll run up the middle. He'll go between the tackles on you and create some physical runs. So I think that you can do a little bit of everything with him. Also, probably the best pass catching back in the state.
Yeah, I think what you said, Mike, just to kind of cover your bases there, and not to say that there's anything, you know, deceptive or shady going on in the way Texas is approaching this, but you recruit Ty Jordan in theory to play H, but if he's at H, and let's say you've got like a run of, you know, injuries, like knock on wood, like we've seen in camp right now with Keontae Ingram being on the shelf, Kirk Johnson's out, well, then that's an easy move. You don't have to wonder, well, what's our like right now for the staff, it's the break glass in case of emergency plan as well. I guess you got to get Jake Smith some run. No, if that happens, now you've got a guy in Ty Jordan. Great, move him to tailback and just keep rolling.
Yeah, and also you could do some two back stuff with him. Yeah. You know, getting more speed out on the field. I think the question, we got this at lunch today in our lunch bunch meeting, is how do you replace little Jordan Humphrey? Your answer was great. You don't. But what you can do is you could attack it in a few different ways. And so by getting more speed on the field and being able to space the field out more, you give yourself a lot more options. And so, you know, I mean, if you're looking up and you've got Jordan Whittington, who I don't know what any time speed he's ever had is, but he's obviously can run. Yeah. Jake Smith, and you've got Ty Jordan, and you've got, I guess Duvernay wouldn't be on the field. He's a senior this year. But you know what I mean. Kennedy Lewis, maybe, who's a sub 10-500 guy. You've given yourself a lot of options, and you're really spreading the defense out there. And you can, and that opens up the running game for the quarterback. It opens up the running game for the running back. It opens up single coverage for maybe your outside guys. So, you know, more versatility, more speed on the field is really how you can attack defenses. And I think it's really when you get down to it, and we talk about, you know, Texas winning the conference is great, but they're going to have to figure out a way that they can consistently beat SEC defenses because or Clemson. That's how you beat those kind of defenses.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Whittington, I think you'll see him move around a little bit. Smith, I would temper expectations, especially early in his true freshman year, just on how much he'll be used in terms of, like, moving him around all over the field. But I agree with you 100%, man. I think you can be really dynamic and, you know, show one personnel group, and, like, you can have Smith, Whittington, and hypothetically Ty Jordan on the field together and start in, like, a 20 personnel grouping, and then you're in an empty set or you're showing 10 personnel, and it doesn't impact really anything you can do with that personnel grouping on the field. It just makes your offense so much more diverse. And anybody that listens to the Blitz regularly knows we talk about it all the time. You're venturing more and more into an era of positionless football and just trying to be more dynamic, trying to be more wide open, trying to create matchups. Guys like Ty Jordan is how you do it. So, but let's say Ty Jordan gets in the boat at some point, Joshua Eaton, the Friday decision happens, and he's at Texas. That leaves Texas with 19. At that point, you're probably down to what, your last four, maybe five spots in the class?
Yeah, 4 to 5, I think. You know, and then we kind of know who those guys are. It's kind of a weird year, and it will probably – something will happen in the fall, and it'll be a completely different board, and where there'll be more numbers. And but I'm really anticipating not doing a ton of work down the stretch, you know, because it seems like they've kind of got everybody done, and we know who else is on the board. There's not – I don't feel like there's going to be anybody really pop up during the season that they're suddenly in the mix for.
You think linebacker could be one of those spots? Because I know, like, Josh White, the LSU commit, is a guy that's out there. But I could see Todd Orlando, like, just kind of monitoring some guys. And maybe it's a JUCO guy. I don't know. But maybe there's just something that pops up and he has to have. But I think, you know, looking at the depth chart, though, I mean, they're kind of in a good spot because it seems like they like what they've gotten out of Marcus Tillman. They like what they've gotten out of Juwan Mitchell. You only lose Jeffrey McCulloch, so – maybe they don't take a linebacker. Like we talked about, maybe Jaden Hullaby ends up being your linebacker take because I think he's still to be determined on where he ends up.
Yeah, I think linebacker is a position. I kind of think tight end is. Like I could see something popping up at tight end, whether it be JUCO or they just find a guy during the season that they end up liking and deciding to offer. But outside of those guys, you know, it's funny. The linebacker conversation is an argument I have on our board weekly because people are like, well, why aren't we taking more linebackers? And have you looked at the depth chart? I mean, they've taken plenty of numbers there over the last.
I didn't even mention David Benda. If you get the Gabriel Floyd back, yeah,
Caleb Johnson's there. I mean, there's bodies, there's numbers. So I think they would absolutely take Josh White, but they're going to have to work to flip him. And I think I could see a scenario where Orlando has a list of names that he's looking for senior film on, and if somebody checks the boxes, they get an offer. But in the end, I really think we kind of know who the board is. So, you know, with that's the case, you're looking at filling out the receiver group, and that's probably Javian Hester and LV Bunkley Shelton. Maybe Jackson Smith Njigba joins that group if Texas can make a little hay there and pull him away from Ohio State. On the defensive line, Alfred Collins, probably the biggest target on the board left. And then really after Eaton and, you know, maybe whatever you do at linebacker, it's kind of it.
Yeah. So really, like we said, if Eaton ends up in the fold, Ty Jordan ends up in the fold, that's really, let's say, if 23 is the number, that leaves you with four spots. That's Alfred Collins, two receivers, and then either a linebacker or, like I said, I think you always leave yourself room for if something comes along that just falls in your lap and is too good to pass up. You know, I go back to the 2010 class where they were kind of debating on whether or not to take a receiver, and this just shows you, like, how some of these situations can end up really helping you in the end. And they're like, well, do we take a receiver? Do we have a number? And then it just so happened, like, it ends up, hey, if you can get Mike Davis on your campus, he's going to flip. And boom, it happened. And that ended up saving a receiver class that just was, at the end of the day, not really good. He had attrition and all kinds of different stuff happened. DeMarco Cobbs ended up playing like nine positions other than wide receiver during his time at Texas. So, yeah, but that's the kind of stuff you're basically kind of best available. Mike, are you – like, I know you've been very vocal that you expected kind of that Sugar Bowl bump to happen at some point. Are you surprised that the wave was this strong, though, like where it was just this rush of commitments? It seemed like – and I know, like, I do think people tend to freak out way too much in April and May, but it just seemed like, man, we got after, like right after the 4th of July, and it was just – boom, all the way to the start of the season.
I think that I probably anticipated some of those decisions to come earlier in the year is what it was. And I think that just with the nature of recruiting, they got pushed back. And so what happened was everybody, it's different every year. Sometimes guys all want to go in the spring. Sometimes they want to wait till the fall. It seemed like this year everybody wanted to get their decision out of the way in the summer. And so they took their visits, and really – for the most part, the guys they landed were guys I expected them to land or at least be a finalist for. And so the bump, you know, it was very frustrating my first couple months on the job, just not being able to report any good.
I felt so bad because, like, you know, the conversations Mike and I would have, I'm like, dude, you're doing a good job. Like, you can't make these kids commit and just make up news.
Right. And so it was – and it started off so good, right, like getting you had Card and then getting Parr last fall, and Majors jumped in January. And then you got Garth, and it's like, all right, we've got, I mean, hell, when's the last time Texas has built most of their offensive line class before April?
Done it in a smart way. Very rarely.
Right. You know what I mean? But at least under Herman and even under Strong, it seemed like they were chasing guys late into the fall to try to fill out an offensive line class. And so it felt good there. And then it just kind of screeched to a halt. But you know,
yeah, I mean, other than you go back to like that 16 offensive line class, right? Like, other than Tope was in the spring, right? Mm-hmm. If I remember right, like an April May deal. And man, I think it was dry in the O line until Denzel Okafor, like right before Thanksgiving.
And that was the year that they filled out like their entire class on signing day, basically.
Yeah, like the Lance was later.
Shackelford supposed to enroll at K State and basically ends up taking an OV to Texas and, like, doesn't leave, just goes back and picks up his back and comes back. And then the Patrick Hudson thing later that summer. But, yeah, I mean, it's been a different deal this cycle.
Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of expected a lot of those decisions earlier. They just came in the summer. The timing is something hard to account for. Never asked me to 100% solidify, like, this is what a kid is going to do at this time, because they're never on time for anything. You know, I mean, how many – even just look at announcements. How many times have we been told a kid tweets like, this Friday, 2 p.m., and then it's like 2:45 and the video drops, you know? I tell my wife all the time, I'm in a business where I'm constantly being held hostage by 18-year-olds. And we can't go to dinner because I got to wait on this thing.
Yeah, it's that, you know, from my time covering recruiting, and it just shows you how much it's changed in, like, you know, what was the last really full cycle? I did it probably like 13, I think, was probably the last full cycle where I was really engulfed in it. The recruiting video was not prevalent in that cycle, so it's just been one of those. But like we said, man, usually when the video gets bumped back, usually that's a good thing for Texas.
Yeah, it has been this year for sure.
Was Chris Thompson's on time, or did he bump that back?
It was on time.
See, so if a kid is scheduled to announce and bumps it back, and you hear from Mike that the video is still in the editing process, it probably means good news is on the way.
Yeah. Right now, that seems to be the trend. And so I guess if I got to wait a little longer for it to be done, it's good news for Texas fans and better for my job and all those sorts of things.
So let's talk some 21s and 22s before we get out of here, Mike. 21, we've missed a couple of commitments because, gosh, everything just came so hard and so fast for that 20 class. But Billy Bowman's a guy that both of us like. I don't know if he's a slot, if he's a nickel, if he's a safety, whatever. He's just one of those guys that you take and you figure out the rest later. I know you were at Denton Ryan a few days ago. What's your take on Billy Bowman? I don't know how much you took from seeing him practice, but just the kind of kid Texas is getting, the kind of players. Denton Ryan is one of those programs, and I'm sure you saw, you know, Coach Henning and that staff doing their thing, and whether it was Joey Florence when he was running that program. I like taking kids from Ryan because, to me, Ryan kids really, they, number one, they understand ball. You know they'll be well coached, and two, they know how to work hard.
Yeah, it's such a almost pro, or I guess I wouldn't say pro program, but it almost resembles a college program. Man, they got three freaks on their team. Drew Sanders is, let me just take a tangent here. Drew Sanders is crazy. Like, I've always thought this kid, I mean, he was we're now joined by my dog, who's being an a-hole on the podcast. Shout out to Winston. Drew Sanders, when I first saw him, he was a quarterback, but he couldn't throw. But he was a big, like, 6'6", freaky athlete. And I've always thought, man, just put that guy on the edge and let him chase quarterbacks. And I think that's probably what Alabama will end up doing. But I saw him catching passes the other day, and he was just bullying tiny kids, moving really fluid. Him, Jatavion Sanders, Billy Bowman, that's three really freaky kids. At Denton Ryan, a program known for having freaky kids. Shout out my first ever recruit crush, Ishi Odegwu, who used to murder.
Wow, class of 2005. You're taking it back to the day, Mike.
I saw his film, and it was the most beautiful violence I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was CTE for like 5 minutes. And I hate that he never worked out at Texas, because I would have told you this guy's going to be a 10-year All-Pro in the NFL.
Yeah, if I remember right, though, like, Ishii's issues, I think, at Texas were just injury-related. It wasn't, you know, talent issues, just he couldn't stay healthy.
Well, when you play his style of ball, that happens. But Billy is dynamic in that he's a slot guy who could take it for a touchdown at any time. He can go deep from the outside, but I really love him at safety. And Texas is really short on safeties in 21 as of right now. I mean, obviously, there are going to be guys that emerge this fall that'll become new names and all that, but for right now, the safety class looks pretty thin. And so I think Texas having him on board, I really love his upside. I think he's like Alford in that he could play any of the safety positions or nickel.
Plus, I mean, and you look on offense, I mean, whether it's, I know Teddy Knox is a guy they like a lot, JoJo Earl is a name that you'll hear a lot. Man, the slot position in 21 in state gets pretty deep when you start going down the list.
That's a great point, is that the H is loaded, which is probably what he would play if he was going to play offense, and safety is thin. So if you've got a guy there that can play safety and you think his best upside is at safety, which I do, I see him being on the defensive side of the ball, especially, you know, feeling good about like guys like JoJo Earl. And there's others out there. I mean, there's this is probably the year that the H has been the most loaded. I know Herman really struggled to find guys in the first couple cycles outside of Jake Smith. You know, the first year was marred with I can't remember the kid's name, Justin Watkins.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
And chasing Jalen Waddle and having Rondale Moore for a period of time. And it was just like, are there any slots in state, you know, that other than Jalen Waddle? And then, you know, last year, obviously they found Smith, which was great, but there weren't a lot of options there either. So this is and this year, not a ton of options. I mean, I don't know that they're going to sign a true H this year. So really, you know, 21 is the year that it looks like there's a bounty of them. So, again, when you recruit to that positional versatility and you recruit athletes who can play both ways and can legitimately play both ways. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I think schools take and then try to put them into a position because they think they can project there. Billy Bowman will play just about every down at safety and every down at receiver this year. So he'll have the experience. He's done it for the last 2 years as well. And really a guy that I think is going to help with Jatavion Sanders. In fact, here is a little nugget for the Blitz.
Ooh, we get a little insider nugget.
And it's not going to be that insider, but Because you'll see it before you hear it. But I've received some information today that makes me feel very good about Texas landing Jatavion Sanders in the near future. So by the time you hear this, there will probably be a crystal ball pick in for Jatavion Sanders.
Hey, keep an eye out for that. No, that's good stuff. Mike, let's I know 21s, you've been on the road for a little bit. Let's start with the Brockermeyers, because I know you were at All Saints, and Tommy Brockermeyer and James Brockermeyer are obviously a hot topic. Anytime you talk about 21 recruiting, it doesn't take long for somebody to go, well, what's going on with the Brockermeyers? Where are things at with the Brockermeyers? You were at All Saints. You've got pretty good information into this recruitment. I mean, your take, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm putting words in your mouth. Yes, if you're Texas, you can feel good about it, but it's not a slam dunk.
I don't know that if their last name wasn't Brockermeyer that Texas would be in the picture. If just the way they look at the process, because their process is, who really cares about offensive line? Which programs out there? Which is, you know, you look at the list of schools that they really like outside of Texas, and it's Iowa, it's Michigan, it's Alabama, it's Clemson, and it's Notre Dame, which are five schools that I would say really care about offensive line. There's schools that develop their offensive linemen into pros. They're guys that really just kind of breed success there. And I think that that's what they're looking for. Now, of course, because they are Brockermeyers, Texas is always going to be in the picture. And I think Texas is in the lead. People freak out if you tell them anything other than, yeah, it's absolutely going to happen. But I want to, those guys are getting tired of people telling them that they're going to Texas because their names are Brockermeyers. I try to lay off of it. Because I don't want them to see me every time and go, okay, here comes Mike. He's going to ask us a bunch of questions about Texas. Right. Like, I'll get them in there, but I'm trying to get a full scope view of this recruitment. I think I've kind of engendered myself to the family pretty well, that I've got some privileged information there. And so when I speak on it, I'm speaking from a position of, hey, I'm hearing this from a lot of people who are very important to the decision process. And what I was told was, and I said it on the board, so I'll say it here. I was told directly from their father, Blake Brockermeyer, who I'm sure won't mind being quoted on this, that, you know, Clemson is a school that they have a lot of interest in, and why wouldn't you? You know, Alabama is a school that they have a lot of interest in, and why wouldn't you? And that if both of those schools really get involved for James, it's going to get very interesting for Texas. And that's not to say that it's a slam dunk either way. All I'm saying is don't pencil these two in just because of who they are and who their last name is. I think that these guys are very individualistic. I think that Blake looks at it as it's their decision. And I think Blake wants what's best for them and their future and their NFL future, you know, if they're fortunate enough to make it to the next level. Now, that said, those guys are going to be at Texas just about as often as they can be. And so I think that, like, they'll be there for the LSU game. They have a game in Austin that Friday night. So if anybody's in town to see the LSU game and you want to see the Brockermeyers, they're playing Austin Regents the Friday night before the LSU game.
Tommy's not playing, right, because of the shoulder issue?
That's right. I forgot to mention that. Tommy is injured and will probably miss a good portion of the season. James will be playing, though. And so you can go see James against Austin Regents on that Friday night. But then they're going to stay in town overnight and come see the game. Obviously, they got a brother there. They're like fourth generation Longhorns or something. Like, there's a lot of advantages there. But the thing I've learned this year, and here's an interesting idea I have. I'm going to write later in the year. I'm going to write an article on things I learned in my first full year covering recruiting. And one of the things I've learned is kids really hate when you tell them where they're going to school forever. And I think the Brockermeyers are there. They're tired of being told they're going to Texas and the other schools don't matter.
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, it's not just Texas. I've seen it work whether you're – you know, I think – honestly, Mike, I think, like, Casey Thompson got tired of hearing that, like, with Oklahoma. Like, and honestly, not to get too far off subject, like, with Casey's recruitment, I remember the year he was at Prime 21. I think you might have been out there that year. You're watching different guys spin it, and because Spencer Sanders was a guy that I was watching at the time, because Texas was still, he wasn't committed to Oklahoma State yet. Texas was still kind of in it at that point. I watched Casey, but I'll be honest, like, I didn't pay as much attention as I probably should, because me, like a lot of people at the time, like, well, he's going to Oklahoma. Right. So, but as it turned out, like, that wasn't the plan. So, I mean, But you know what they say, and as my wife reminds me all the time, you know what happens when you assume.
Exactly. And so I'm just saying that this is not going to be an easy, quick recruitment that's just, you know, and maybe if Texas was at a position where they were putting linemen in the league regularly, it would be an easy, quick recruitment. But frankly, like I said, if it, you know, viewing the factors that they're looking at, if they weren't Brockermeyers and didn't have a ton of ties to the school, I'm not sure Texas would be that highly considered.
I do think, though, if you're Texas and whether – I mean, look, the 2021 offensive line class in terms of top-end talent is as good as I can remember in the state in a really long time. When you talk about Donovan Jackson, Tommy Brockermeyer, Savion Byrd, you throw Bryce Foster in there, you got Hayden Connor. I mean, you can go like 7-8 guys deep and still find a guy that in some years would probably be like a top 6 or 7 guy in the state. I say that to say this, if you're the Brockermeyers and looking at Texas or anybody looking at Texas and kind of looking, okay, what program produces NFL offensive linemen, has Texas done that consistently? Obviously not, but I think now, finally, they've got the right combination of Tom Herman and this pro spread in an offensive system that you know is going to be there as long as he's there. You've got an offensive line coach in Herb Hand who, Mike, you've talked to guys that understand ball better than either of us will, guys that have, you know, forgotten more ball than we know. Those types of guys speak highly about what Herb Hand in terms of he knows what he's doing. And take a shot, because I'm saying this again, the player development aspect and Yancey McKnight just being a complete game changer. Like those three aspects, Texas has a situation now that's more conducive to produce an offensive lineman than they've had, I don't know, maybe since like the mid-2000s when it was kind of the right combination of zone read and really good talent, and you know, everything came together. They were able to redshirt some guys and kind of the dominoes fell into place.
Yeah, and you look at a guy like Sam Cosmi, who if he continues on his trend, it's very possible he's a first or second round pick in 2 years. You know, who else on that line? I think Shackelford will probably get a look in the NFL. I'm not sure he'll be highly drafted, but I think he's a guy that looks like he could maybe
– Parker Braun, I think, is the guy that's going to get some looks.
You know, maybe Junior Anguilao.
Of those guys, I think he's probably got the most potential, especially, you know, when you look at – because, I mean, as a Cowboys fan, as much as they've put into the offensive line, I kind of try to follow those trends as much as I can. And, you know, when teams are putting a premium on guys like Aaron Donald, in turn, you have to put a premium on centers and guards. So – I mean, I think we're seeing more guards now go in the first and second round than I can ever remember. So I think Angelau's got a chance there. I mean, Derek Kerstetter to me is a guy, Mike, that as he continues to physically develop, I think they're going to be like, smart kid, you know, started a bunch of games at Texas and can play, you know, he won't be a tackle at the next level, but can be a center guard swing guy. And you've got, you know, if you're fighting for a roster spot, that position flexibility helps out. So we say all that to say this, like if you're looking at the big picture for the Texas offensive line, and I wrote this a couple of weeks ago, it's finally at the point where you can legitimately say the arrow is pointing up and they've got some room to grow.
Yeah, and even like when Connor Williams was on the line, we all knew like, okay, this kid's going to get – he'll be the one that breaks the curse and he'll go drafted high. But when you looked at the rest of that line, you couldn't say that, you know, who else on this line is going to do that. And so
speaking of that, like the 2016 offensive line, you know Ken Perkins just retired?
I saw that. Yeah, him and Christian Westerman retired in back-to-back days for the Bengals.
What might have been?
That could have been – they could have been line mates, right? I can't remember when
Christian Westerman was class of 11, and then Perkins was 13.
Yeah, so I just – those names were blast from the past. I kind of forgot. And I also saw, like, Trey Hopkins actually, like, got a starting job again somewhere, and I was just like, oh, wow, I totally forgot about his name as well. But, yeah, I mean, it's – like I said, you know, the trend is up, and that's obviously good news. It's not probably going to be up quick enough to start swinging 21 guys if that's what they're interested in. But, you know, luckily you have the ties. And I think too many times, like, Texas has signed a lot of legacy kids. I'm not sure a lot of their legacy kids have ever been this highly rated as Tommy is. Whereas I think A&M probably benefits more from some sort of legacy in their family than Texas has with higher rated kids. And so – you know, this is one where it's all right. Feel good about using those ties and those natural, you know, kind of advantages that you have and go to work on that. I think in the end, I would still be mildly surprised if Texas didn't win them both. But I'm saying that it's not a done deal.
So, Mike, any other 21s? We haven't really talked Derek Harris Jr. as we get ready to wrap this thing up. And just that 21 class in general, any thoughts on Derek Harris, or is anything in 21 right now?
Derek Harris, we should give him his due. I mean, just a really good-looking prospect, well-built. Again, that's kind of going back to what I talked about with Parr and Majors is how cool is it to have a linebacker committed right now, and like a really good one, and probably like the best one in the state. You know, that's just such a position that's been so bare for years that, you know, a lot of people, I think, project Derek to be a B-backer. I could see him fitting inside at Rover, Mac, and I think he's got a lot of versatility to his game. And I think that, like, the H position, B-backer is strong in 21. There's a lot of candidates there. I think Jatavion Sanders could fit there. I think Landon Jackson maybe could fit there, depending on how he develops. Clayton Smith fits there. So they're going to have their shot with a lot of guys at that position. And so I think you can do a lot of versatile stuff with Derek Harris. Just a really mean, nasty player. And I kind of loved his attitude on the whole deal. He was like, I knew it was Texas. It was always going to be Texas. Why wait? You know, so there's a lot of those kids that would have waited until, you know, September of next year to do that, even though they kind of knew it was always going to be that school. So just a really great kid, really cool to deal with so far. I don't know him extremely well. I've talked to him in person once or twice and talked to him all the time offline, but really, I think a good, strong start to that defensive class in 21 with that to this point has been all offense. And so, like I said, I think it's, I think you could see Jatavion Sanders join the group this fall. And man, if they can, I always say this, feels like we end every podcast this way, but like if they can win, it's going to keep rolling, you know, especially with the start that they have. So, you know, it's going to depend on the season. That LSU game will be huge, but things are looking really good in 21. And like I mentioned, I think they got a good jump at 22, especially with a guy like Jadarian Price, who was named the top player in the state by 20.
Yeah. Now, real quick, Price is a kid that, I think it running back usually is one of those positions where you can tell pretty early if a guy's going to be something. They offered him really early. Like, this was a kid that the staff jumped out and were like, whoa, let's go ahead and put the offer on the table.
They offered him very early, and Tom Herman called and made the offer personally, which when their head coach told me that, and that was back in the spring when, like, so they offered him on like a Thursday. I looked at a 7-on-7 qualifier and saw that they were going to be in like Colleyville on Saturday. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going out there to see this kid. He doesn't answer the phone. He doesn't do Twitter really. So it's like, you have to like hammer that to get in good with him and to be where I want to be. He's got to see me early and often and know who I am when he sees me. So like, I wanted to go out there and make that, you know, introduction, and got to talking to his coach, Chad Rogers, one of the best coaches in the state. Used to coach at Snyder, actually, and coach Sonny Cumby actually told me at that point in time, like, Sonny Cumby and TCU were hemming and hawing on offering him until Texas offered. And so I think that when he told me that day that, yeah, I said, so who made the offer? And he said, well, Coach Herman called and personally made it. That really stuck out to me. That's one that I was like, okay, this is a kid that they really love. It's not like we're going to throw this offer out there early. It's a kid that they really love. And the funny thing is, maybe this is just in my mind, but I can really tell who the staff likes when I tweet about them and who on the staff likes my tweets. When I went out to Denison, damn near the entire staff was liking every tweet I was putting out about him. Yeah. So they obviously love that kid. He's he may be a five-star running back. When he's a senior, he won't have the attitude of it unless recruiting totally changes him. But I don't think his coaches are going to let him. And he is a kid that doesn't really want to talk about recruiting. He's very much about his team. And, you know, he said the coolest thing about the whole process was that he's going to have 3 years to be highly recruited. And that's going to get his teammates a lot of looks from college coaches over the next 3 years when they come out to see him. You love a kid like that. And so getting in early for him, I think they've got him on campus twice since that time. It's a long time until he decides. And there's a lot of factors, but you know, getting that early start is good to see, because there's a lot of times that we've sat and said, how come they haven't offered this kid? And yeah, I think they're getting better at that.
Anybody that's interested, I do believe, I could be wrong on this, but I do believe Sherman and Denison, I think that's going to be a Fox Southwest game the first Friday of the football season. The Battle of the Axe, that's a really good tradition in high school football. So if you get a chance to, I think it's Mason and Wall on Thursday, and then Sherman Denison on Friday if you're a if you've got Fox Southwest on your cable or satellite provider. Mike, anything else from the road? I know you went and saw Kamar Wheaton. I don't know where else you went, but just anything else you want to add before we close this down on 21 or 22?
I also went out to West Mesquite, but I think we've talked about Ty in depth. No, I think that's pretty much it. I can say this is the first week I'll be able to say it. I guess I could say it next week, too, since we'll record before Friday. But I will be on the road, very excited for the high school season. I'm in a weird new place now in the full-time role because I didn't do a lot of Saturday games when I was part-time. And now I've got a couple Saturday games planned, and so I'm trying to figure out how to work those around Texas games. But, like, I will miss the Louisiana Tech game. So Friday night, for anybody who's interested, I will be at Bastrop Cedar Creek versus Austin Reagan to see Alfred Collins.
Is that at Bastrop or is that in like Nelson Field game?
It's at Bastrop, which I hear has a good food spread, I'm told.
They do. I've only been to one Bastrop game out at the newer stadium out on Highway 21, which very familiar with that road. Living out in my my neck of the woods in Hayes County, so I know what that's all about. But so anyway, you've got Alfred Collins, and what else week one?
Saturday, I will go from Austin to San Antonio, and I'm going to go see Logan Parr and O'Connor take on Steele Saturday night, first week of the season. Steele is one of my favorite programs. Jalen Jones, even though people expect me to hate him because he's an A&M commit, I really is one of the kids I love most. His family was awesome to me the entire process. They treat me like family whenever I see him. So I told him, I'm going to catch a game in your last season, and you know, happens to be that they play Parr and O'Connor, and that made it perfect. I love the coaching staff at Steele and their program. Love going to see Logan Parr. So, and making it a Saturday game, a lot easier for me to get to and see. So really excited about week one. Then week two will be really in full swing. I can't find a Thursday night game yet in Dallas, and that's really bothering me because it seems like the first Thursday night of the season I'm going to be sitting at home, and I don't really want to do that. I'd rather be at a game, but there's just nobody playing that I really need to go see.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe check down around Austin. Maybe just head down there a day early. I don't know if there's any Thursday games in Austin or not, but sometimes if they are, they're really not the kind of games. Like in that area, like Killeen ISD, they'll have some Thursday games or something like that, or maybe like Waco have a Thursday game or something like that.
For those of you in the Austin area, most of this will really be a lot of the Austin coverage I'm doing. So a lot of it's going to be Clint. Our guy Clint Buckley is going to be doing a lot of our Austin coverage. So like I won't see Lake Travis during the fall. I'll see him probably in the playoffs. I won't see Maynard. I'm going to go see Collins because I want to see him in person. But Clint is going to be our guy in Austin, so he'll mostly be out at games.
All right. Well, Mike, I think it's about time to shut it down. Any last parting shots before we go?
No, I mean, that's it. I appreciate all the great reception that we've gotten on this podcast. I appreciate everyone who listens and everybody who reads and makes this stuff possible for us. It's a really cool job I get to do, and I couldn't do it without you guys. So thank you. I mean, I can't tell you, if you can't hear my voice, I can't tell you how excited I am for high school football to be back. Like I got to single digits in my countdown the other day and just started tingling. So I'm extremely ready. Just get me through this last week.
Mike, thanks for letting me into your house and allowing me to use your kitchen table to record. And we're going to have to shut it down because we got to get ready to go back up 35 to crazy Fort Worth and do this this kickoff dinner rally party. I don't know what we're calling it, but be with the Texas X's of Fort Worth tonight. So we'll do that. Mike, thanks, man.
Thanks, Chef. Appreciate it.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He is on Twitter at MikeRoach247. I am on Twitter at JeffHowe247. We are on Twitter at Horns247 for Horns247. And we are out of time. Don't forget, anywhere you get your podcast, you can get Longhorn Blitz, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Thanks to Matt Butler, you can get all of our archives, classic shows on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page. And starting next week, twice a week, on 104.9 The Horn in Austin, hornfm.com, and streaming worldwide on The Horn app. For the Horn family, for the Horns 24/7 family, I am Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.